Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur, in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, his mood is one, he's a in Sakyaras, he's a disciple of Lord Nityananda. And his mood is very light, jovial and friendly. Whereas Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, his mood is one in Madhurya Ras. So he explains the intricacies and the development of the relationship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Radha and Krishna. But that element is not found in the Chaitanya Bhagavat very strongly. So when Vrindavan Das Thakur writes about Puri, instead of going into the deep inner mood of Lord Chaitanya, his writing is very jovial and happy. So neither of them are considered to be imperfect. And sometimes one is good and sometimes the other is. So I thought I'd just read a couple of short sections from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. One day in a very blissful mood, Advaita Acharya told the devotees, "My dear Vaishnava brothers, today let us sing only about Lord Chaitanya. For he is the fountainhead of all incarnations and the most munificent." So here's Advaita Acharya deciding he's going to speak very openly about Lord Chaitanya's position. "Today we devotees are respected in society simply because Sri Gauranga has himself propagated the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord. But now, I want all of you to sing Lord Chaitanya's glories while I chant and dance. If you are afraid that the Lord will find out, then chant more loudly to drown away your fears." Lord Chaitanya always tried to hide his real identity. It is for this reason that the devotees were afraid to sing about him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, they could not disobey Advaita Acharya's instructions, and so they began to loudly sing. After dancing for some time, Advaita Acharya took the lead by singing his own composition. So he was being very bold. He sang, "Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Lord Narayan, the ocean of mercy and the friend of the distressed. O Lord, please be kind to me." So Advaita Acharya was being very, very bold.
Imagine the Bengalis would break out into a song.
Yeah. So you could, in other words, all the time everyone knew who Lord Chaitanya was. He couldn't hide himself from his devotees. His characteristics were such. But he was always insisting that no, there was like a competition went on between them, that when they would say you are Supreme Lord or something, he would say, block his ears or say no or something. Now they were all going to sit, and as I remember, because this is a summary, I think in the full translation of this particular story, it was at Gambira that Advaita Acharya decided to do this bold thing. Then the devotees responded, like you're saying, the Bengalis sing, and they're singing in their own language, so they get a lot of feeling from their singing. And the devotees responded by singing, "Jai Sachinandana, Jai Sachinandana." And after some time, Advaita Acharya began singing another song that he had composed. And this song said, "Jai Gaur Sunda, the ever-expanding ocean of compassion. All glories to the Prince of Braj, who now has appeared as the hero of Navadvip. Kindly offer me the cooling shade of your lotus feet." So this is what he was singing. And no, everyone had to sing loudly to allay their fears. The tempo of the kirtan picked up and Advaita Acharya danced ecstatically. Because the songs were new to the devotees, they enjoyed the singing more than usual. Hearing the loud kirtan, Lord Chaitanya arrived on the scene. He beheld a magnificent spectacle. The devotees were radiant with transcendental happiness, and in their midst, Advaita Acharya danced in ecstasy. The devotees felt no fear as they loudly chanted Lord Chaitanya's glories, even whilst he stood in front of them. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had always maintained a mood of humble servitorship to the Supreme Lord. He always said, "I am the servant of Lord Krishna," and no one even dared to call him the Supreme Lord in his presence. But now, however, by the strength of Advaita Acharya, the devotees sang fearlessly, glorifying Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. While listening to this glorification, the Lord seemed to feel somewhat ashamed. Then after a few minutes, he left. So in the full description, it says that he left and locked himself in his room. To go home. He was so embarrassed, he hid from this presentation. Finally, after a long and enthusiastic kirtan, the devotees departed to see Lord Chaitanya. After returning home from kirtan, where he had been glorified, Lord Chaitanya lay down, appearing quite upset. Govinda, the Lord's servant, then came and informed him that all the devotees were waiting at the door, hoping to see him. The Lord instructed Govinda to usher everyone inside. The devotees came in and saw Lord Chaitanya lying down, and he did not look at anyone. Being very nervous and afraid, the devotees began to pray while remembering the Lord's lotus feet. So they maybe have done the wrong thing. After a short time, Lord Chaitanya got up and he said, "My dear Srivas, my dear devotees, leaving aside the glories of Lord Krishna, what avatar were you singing about today? Please explain this." Being a very talented speaker, Srivas Pandit replied. He said, "My Lord, the living entities are not independent entities. Like puppets, they act as the Supreme Controller wishes. This is what occurred today. We sang what the Supreme Controller wanted us to sing." The Lord retorted, "Oh, you are all erudite scholars. Why do you disclose that which is meant to remain secret?" Smilingly, Srivas Pandit made a funny gesture by raising his hands towards the sky as if shielding his eyes from the sun. Lord Chaitanya asked, "Srivas, what is the meaning of this?" So he's going like this. Srivas Pandit replied, "Clearly I am trying to cover the sun with my hands. But is it really possible for me to do so? Similarly, can your fame be concealed? Even if it were somehow possible to cover the sun with the palm of my hand, still, it would be not possible for you to hide yourself. Your glories are known everywhere. Right now, in Brahmaloka, kirtan is reverberating in glorification of you. How many of us are going to punish? How many of us are you going to punish for this?" Just then something miraculous happened. Thousands of people from all over India who had come to see Lord Jagannath suddenly appeared at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's door, being anxious to see him. Their voices rang out, "All glories to Sri Krishna Chaitanya, the Supreme One, who relishes devotional service to himself. All glories to the Supreme Lord, who has accepted the dress of a sannyasi." In this way, thousands were singing and dancing in ecstasy. And Srivas Pandit said, "My Lord, where will you hide now? The whole world is singing your glories. You are invisible, unmanifest, and imperceptible. and yet out of your causeless mercy you have personally appeared. You hide yourself, and then by your will alone you manifest yourself. Only those who are recipients of your divine grace are able to know this. Lord Chaitanya replied, Srivas, you have displayed your mystic power by making the people sing as they have, and in this way I have been defeated by you. You are certainly fully empowered as a result of your devotional service. Lord Chaitanya then bade farewell to the devotees while smiling wonderfully. Lord Chaitanya always gave his association to the Vaishnavas. Being thus surrounded by pure devotees of the Lord, he appeared like the full moon in the midst of bright stars. What did you learn from?
Well, I was just thinking about that last today, and hearing that, like, the way the chariot put it forward to the devotees, but it followed him. And then when you hear Srivas speaking, he's just, his conviction is full.
Yes. Yes.
And Mahaprabhu, at first, he wanted to know what this incarnation is. And at first, he confronted them very, had the wall up. We were using that. But then, when Srivas gave a very sound, correct response, and then Mahaprabhu was a step back and said, well, someone wants to remain concealed. You know, he stepped back and said, okay. But then Srivas also said, you know, sorry.
How can you conceal the sun?
And then, of course, so instructive to hear that. Just on the strength of his devotional service, he was so empowered, Srivas was so empowered, and he could influence 1,000 people to glorify Chaitanya.
And confirm what he, imperceptibly, and confirm what he was actually saying himself previous, that Krishna arranged that. These are little cute stories, but there's so many deep things within them. I'll read another one. One day, as Lord Chaitanya was sitting encircled by his associates, he asked, tell me, Pandit Srivas, in your estimation, what sort of a Vaishnava is a Dvaita Acharya? Srivas thought for a while, and then he said, in my opinion, he is like Sukadev Goswami or Prahlad Maharaj. Hearing this, the Lord picked up a stick and struck Srivas Pandit in a fit of anger, just as a father affectionately slaps his son to teach him a lesson. The Lord said, Srivas, what did you say? In comparison to my Nada is the name he calls it, called a Dvaita Acharya. Sukadev is an infant. Such a derogatory statement from you is breaking my heart. So he was so strong. This is his love for... And now he's going to have to explain who a Dvaita Acharya is. Saying this, the Lord picked up a heavy stick and rushed at Srivas to beat him and drive him away. Seeing this, a Dvaita Acharya jumped up and respectfully grabbed Lord Chaitanya by the hands. He very humbly said, a father teaches his son with love and compassion. Who then in all the three worlds could be the recipient of your anger? This pacified the Lord, who then began to speak ecstatically. He said, all of you are like my children, and so I cannot remain angry with you for very long. Who is there that really knows my Nara? Now he will describe. He woke me up from my mystic slumber. So he has to reveal himself, and he has to reveal who Lord Advaita, who Advaita Acharya is. And this is Srivas's cleverness, because Srivas also knew who Advaita Acharya was. So he said, he woke me up from my mystic slumber and made me descend to the earth. Actually, Sukadev, Prahlad, and all others are all his children. Shiva's Pandit was extremely fond of Advaita Acharya. Upon hearing the Lord's praises, he felt great happiness. Feeling remorse, Shrivas Pandit said, "Oh my Lord, kindly forgive my offences. You alone know the truth about your Advaita Acharya. And only when you reveal it, will the devotees like us understand it. Today you have mercifully taught me that Advaita Acharya is Vishnu Tattva and not a jiva. I vow in your presence that from today, even if I should see Advaita Acharya associating with a lower class woman or drinking alcohol, I will always serve and respect him." Lord Chaitanya was very satisfied with these words, and so the assembly became as carefree as before. Now, what was interesting about that one, Sri Radharaman?
Well, it's interesting that Mahaprabhu would ask in the first place, why is it for Sri Radha's benefit? No, it's for the glorification of Advaita in general, the understanding for all the devotees that they should know his position, respect him, for this is at the end there. Sri Radha's expertly reciprocated in such a way as to draw from. He put it back to Mahaprabhu himself. And he should be the one to, as you say, reveal both himself and the Advaita Acharya for the benefit of all the Vaishnavas. So it's like an expert play between the two of them.
Yes.
For the benefit of everyone.
Yeah. Any other thoughts? What's the difference between Sukadeva Goswami, Swami and Prahlad Maharaj and Advaita Acharya? Yes, but what's the difference between Advaita Acharya and Sukadeva and Prahlad?
Advaita Acharya is like Mahashanta.
Yes, so he's... Yeah, he's Vishnu Tattva. That means he's an avatar of the Supreme Lord himself. So the other two, whilst they're extremely great and wonderful devotees, as he says here, they are like his children because they're jiva tattva.
So the philosophical lesson is that one should make it clear and understand clearly the distinction between
jiva tattva and Vishnu tattva. Because otherwise anyone can say anyone's God. See sometimes up billboards here and there for Mahayogi, somebody, and you know they pop a few words in there that put him, you know, in a nebulous position somewhere like he might be God. But in fact he's just a... And so Prahlad Maharaj, as Pali said, Prahlad Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami are so great. And still Lord Chaitanya is going to beat him with a stick for saying that, comparing Advaita Acharya with them. So this is not to criticize them, but to enhance the glories, as Radharaman was pointing out, to enhance the glories of Advaita Acharya, and how Srivas Pandit is so expert at speaking back to Mahaprabhu, exchanging with Mahaprabhu in such a way that it allows him to speak for the benefit of all, in a way that everyone can understand. Here's another little one. One day, as Lord Gaur Hari was sitting contentedly, Advaita Acharya came, offered his obeisances, and sat down. The Lord smiled and asked, "Where are you coming from? And what work have you been doing?" Advaita Acharya replied, "I have just had darshan of Lord Jagannath, and now I have come to see you." Still the Lord inquired. He said, "Yes, but after seeing Lord Jagannath, what did you do?" Advaita Acharya replied, "I had darshan of Lord Jagannath, and then I circumambulated him several times." When the Lord heard the word pradakshina, which means circumambulation. He smiled and he said, "You have been defeated." Surprised, Advaita Acharya asked, "In what way have I been defeated? First tell me that, and then you can claim your victory." The Lord replied, "Very well. When you circumambulated Lord Jagannath, each time that you were behind him, you could not see his sweet smiling face. When I have darshan, I always stand in front of Lord Jagannath, and so my eyes never ever leave his face." With folded hands, Advaita Acharya admitted, "Truly, I have been defeated by you. Other than you, no one within the three worlds could understand the true significance of your words." The devotees greatly enjoyed hearing this exchange, and they loudly chanted the holy names of the Lord. What do we learn from this little pastime?
What is the
Radharaman? We'll try and see if Radharaman can bring it down to our level. What is the true significance? Let's find it.
If one develops attraction to Krishna, then that automatically and spontaneously dominates the consciousness such that the intensity of that desire to always think of Krishna, see Krishna's form, overrides all other activities, even functions one would normally perform in a regulated way, such as to circumambulate the deity, or to offer service to the deity in a regulated way according to principles of
deity worship. Deity. Yeah.
Mahaprabhu is just indicating that when attraction arises, it defeats the performance of all regulative functions. That's why he's using this word defeat.
Does everyone understand that?
Yeah.
So in other words, there's somewhere, I think Srila Rupa Goswami wrote a little something or other that describes when Srimati Radharani was speaking to one of the gopis. I can't remember where I had read it, but that they were describing the beauty of Krishna's form, or she asked them something and they were describing it. When I look at Krishna, I see his eyes and his this, and then she describes the beauty of Krishna's form. And she says to the other gopi, "You're so lucky that you can do that, because when I see Krishna, I just look at his feet, or I just look at his eyes, and I can't move from there. I can't look at anything else. I'm just looking at his eyes and I'm completely immersed." So it sounds as though the other one is better, but actually what is being in reverse explained is the depth of her attachment is so great that, like we say, yugyayatam namishena chakshusha pravishayatam, that one yuga without Krishna seems so long. So similarly, that the gopis also, they criticize Brahma for making eyelids, because of we're blinking all the time. We don't even notice. There's no, like, if I'm looking at someone and blinking, I still see them. We can all experience that, right? We all blink, we all see. It doesn't make any difference to us. It doesn't make a difference to the gopis. The time that they blinked and couldn't see Krishna seemed like millions of years. So I was thinking about that myself, and I thought, well, how would that be? You'd have to really, really, really be attached to something or someone to feel like that. And we don't have anything like that. There's nothing like that in our experience of life. That we can wait a blink. I can't wait a blink to be with this person. You know, there just isn't anything like that. So therefore, it seems a little bit maybe exaggerated. But actually, this is the description given of the loving sentiment that is actually possible to be experienced.
I was thinking how we can bring this to our level.
Yes.
We can imagine that we go to a festival at the temple, and the deities are being decorated so beautifully for that particular festival. And we see them and they're struck and they're decorated. So much so that we're looking at the whole program, and then the program goes through its procedures, and it comes time for prasadam, and everyone's being called to prasadam. But we're so attracted to that. We're tasting so much the beauty of the deities, of course.
Why don't we try reversing the example? We probably would bring it to our level.
I'm thinking that.
No, but I was trying to think what's like the regular thing that we're most attached to.
That's why I was saying reverse it the other way around. And then we'll all be able to relate. How about I try another one? That's very nice. What you said is correct. But I was thinking, what about on an ekadasi, when everyone's sitting and we're talking about something or something else, and somebody says, prasadam is ready! And everybody just immediately wants to immediately go.
Say again? Everyone immediately wants to hear more Chaitanya.
Yes, right. So we have to find something that we have some fondness for. And then if we multiply that by many, 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 many millions of times, we have to go up to that level to actually understand, but we can bring that down to our level to get a little glimmer of what it would be like.
There's a secondary thing that I was thinking of. Immediately when you started reading the pastime, I was thinking, Mahaprabhu knows. He knows exactly what a word chain has just been doing. And sure enough, you can pick up clearly that he knows exactly what's just happened.
Yes.
So then I was thinking, the whole thing, I was thinking, Krishna knows exactly in what consciousness and what mood we're going about our devotion. And he just wants us to come up, become more deeply attracted to him.
Yeah.
That's what he's expressing. Good, bad. Just become attracted to
him deeply. So that's really it, isn't it? He just wants us to come up. He knows where each one of us is. It's not as if it's a secret to him.
Yes.
It's not like he says, I am seated in everyone's heart. From me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So, and I've seen this myself, when I have some responsibility to present something or do something, and then I start thinking, oh, I'm not going to be able to remember this, or I'm not going to be able to do this properly. And I start like praying to Krishna, oh, help, help, I'm going to really need help to do this. Immediately, I can see there's reciprocation on my own little teeny tiny level. So if there's reciprocation on our own little levels, we can see also that as we advance, there'll be more reciprocation and more reciprocation. But he wants us to come up, and he's willing to help us come up. He knows where we are, so it's not like he wants us to do something that's impossible, but he wants us to come closer and closer to him, because that's the only way we'll be happy. Like we're reading about the Gundicha cleansing, that there's no other way to get rid of the miseries of life. I was just talking to a friend from Australia on the phone who was telling me how 6 weeks ago, her mother was mildly ill with nothing very major. And in the afternoon, she wasn't feeling so well. And then all of a sudden, she was walking across the room and she said, and not a very old person, and said, I feel a little bit dizzy. And her husband helped her to the bed. And she said, and I think you should call the hospital. So he rang the hospital, called an ambulance. And within a very short time after that, she just suddenly, he said, "Are you feeling any pain?" And she said, "No." And she said, "But my hands and cold feet feel very cold." And then she said, all of a sudden, "I can't stay here anymore." And he said, she said, he was across the room watching his wife, and he could perceive that she left her body right then. And so she's a devotee, but she's a sort of a beginning devotee. And so she was telling me, I guess she was speaking the same thing with yourself, but she was saying that, and not only that, she's an osteopath. She said that within the next week or something in her work, the next day I think it was, she went to work and she was dealing with different people, you know, and four people burst into tears that same day and told her that somebody in their family had, they just lost a relative. And then she said, and not only that, she said, 2 weeks before this happened, she said some lady came into her office or whatever, and she said, "I felt there was something, and I wasn't quite sure, I felt something was not quite right with her." And then I gave her massage and everything, and then at the end I had to go and feed my son. So I said, "I have to go and feed my son Arjuna." And this lady, her eyes, she said, "Arjuna?" She said, "You're a devotee?" And the lady was a devotee, not an ISKCON devotee, something else, but she was a devotee. And it turned out that she also was terminally ill with cancer. And so I said to Haiti, you know, remember Haiti from down? So I said, "Haiti, I think Krishna's trying to tell you something." She said, "You bet, big time." "See, what is he trying to tell you?" And then she was going on, she said, "And all my family," she said, "the hardest part is dealing with my family." And she's just so much a devotee. She's like only a teeny bit of devotee, although she's good-hearted. I don't know if she chants any japa or, you know, any process really. I don't think she follows. She's just starting, you know, a little teeny bit here, a teeny bit there. But she said, my mother's sister is like completely devastated, and she's reading all the books she can on how to converse with, you know, seances and this and this and that, and my sister's completely falling apart and everything. She said, but somehow with me, I don't know what it is. I have some, I don't know, some, and I said, shelter? And she said, yes, I've got some shelter. That's what it is. I've got a shelter. And she's like, hardly knows about Krishna consciousness. What to speak of if somebody is trying to follow very strictly.
She told me that we'd come and find you. The amazing thing is that she came to visit Gopinath Dham and just some weeks before this. And we had someone there, Gopinath Dham, who was in her final days. And she was there when this devotee at Gopinath Dham left her body. So she was saying, she didn't know then that Krishna had arranged that she had all these frames of reference that she was going to take away from her experience of Gopinath Dham for something that was coming up
for her.
For her. She had no idea then that was the case. But that's what Krishna had first very carefully arranged.
Yeah.
That all of her frames of reference in relationship to death, in preparation for death, were devotional. She said, "I saw all the ways dead, and I saw all those family members dead. And that's what I just kept coming to my mind.
So what I saw from it is, and I've seen this also, one thing I've also seen, not to sound like, you know, negative way, because it actually isn't, but sometimes I've found when I have a really, really powerful prakram experience, I go back to my place and meet something very, very intense, and it's as if Krishna sort of, he brings you up to a certain level and says, "Now deal with this," and he hands you something to deal with. And the first time it happened, I thought, "Oh no!" Like it was a sort of a jinx or something. But the second time it happened, I began to see that I'm thinking, how can I make any advancement? And when I go home, I'm like, this, and this. What's the here? I'm doing this, and this. And then he says, "No, I'm going to help you to make some advancement." And if you see like that, if you develop that way of seeing, that vision, that makes Krishna consciousness really easy. It really, really makes Krishna consciousness easy when you see Krishna's hand as benevolent. And it takes some time to cultivate that because we're so used to not seeing benevolently, because we feel like the world is there and we have to, you know, hold our own and protect ourselves, and, you know, and so much hard work. But this is a young person. She's not, as I said, she was not even doing anything. And the reason she came to Gopinath Dham was because she had so many problems in her life. And she rang up one day and I said, "Why don't you come to Perth?" And she said, I'd like to do that. And then she did something else and I forgot about it. And then all of a sudden she wrote me a note on the email and said, "I'm coming on such and such a date and I'm staying for 2 weeks." She has a little baby son, so she brought her little boy and she came, and she got so many impressions. So she said, "Where are you? I want to know what you're doing." I said, "We just came from Mayapur. You wouldn't imagine what Mayapur is like." And I'm telling, and there's these big deities, you know, Lord Chaitanya. I'm trying to think what she knows and what she doesn't. I'm describing, and I said, "And the energy is so much." And it was just so amazing, spiritually so powerful. And then I said, "Hedy, one day you should bring your boy Arjuna to Mayapur." And she said, do you think I could do that?" And I said, "It all begins with a desire. You can't do it now, but you start with a desire." So this is what her trip to Gopinath Dham was like. It started with a desire. So that's the same thing with all our Krishna consciousness. And it may be frustrating to us that we have a desire and we can't, you know, execute it immediately, but it's coming. Just as we see with her, everything has been set into place in such a way to facilitate the satisfaction of that desire. When we see that, instead of seeing that everything seems to be getting in the way of my desire, then Krishna consciousness becomes really easy. It, you know, takes some practice. It's a change of mentality. You've got to shift from looking at it this way to looking at it that way. And coming to the Dham is part of that change to transit of the conceptual level. But once that's there, this is simple, because then it's simple. You just take shelter of Krishna. This happens, it's really bad, go and take shelter of Krishna. This happens, it's really good, go and take shelter of Krishna. In every situation, this is what you start to think. Just in the same way as Saradiya goes from her father to her mother, from her father to her mother. And she thinks she's happy in both situations, and it's natural for a child to go and sit with their father, go and sit with their mother. And Kali Yuga is so abominable and there's so many anomalies, but if we were to see Krishna as very safe and very much caring for us like that, then it's like there may be so many things going on around, but the child just goes to their father and goes to their mother. And so this is the ideal. We can say, "Oh yes, but life is so much more complicated than that." But Krishna consciousness isn't. It's actually very simple. We shouldn't give up hope and think, "Oh, this I can't do this." We can do it. We can do it and we will do it. We just have to keep proceeding in this way. I'll read one last story, a little one.
I was just thinking, what about then for those who feel discouragement and hear this last passed on, because it doesn't feel like I'll ever have that sort of attraction, and that all my devotional activities are always going to be destroyed. Performance.
It begins by turning that discouragement into a want. It's not actually very hard to do that. It takes, of course, a simplicity of heart. But first of all, you're feeling, "I'll never have that." And then we feel discouraged. And if we could just make this is the adjustment again, to say, instead of saying, "I'll never have that," to say, "Is it possible that I could ever have that?" That's not an idealistic, exuberant statement. It's not like you have to say, deny yourself your depressed, you know, disheartenment, deny yourself that flavor, and instead get exuberant. It's not that. It's something more natural than that. If we could think, if we're disheartened, that means we want it. Otherwise, we wouldn't be disheartened. So first we should understand that our disheartenment means that we want it. And then we ask for it. And then we have maybe some time separating us from it. But it will come. She said to me, sorry, one last thing. She said to me, she was talking about her dealings with others. And she said, I'm falling back into old bad habits, you know, of this. And she was describing them. And then she said, part of me is feeling like I should just depend on Krishna and Krishna's taking care of me and I'm feeling very safe and But part of me is thinking, why not this? And rah, rah. She was describing her part. And she said, I've been on guard. I keep myself on guard against that part. And she said, and I feel like I have to always be on guard against that part. And I said, yes, that's actually what it means to become mature. You always have to be on guard against that part. So I noticed maturing in her because a few years back, if I said that to her, she'd go, oh, that's too hard, that's not fair, why? But now, because she's making little teeny steps, she can see that principle that you do have to be on guard against your human weak side. You can't just say, oh, here comes my human weaknesses. Uh-oh, here we go, bye-bye. Dive right into them. You have to recognize them. And so as I was speaking to her, I could see that she was, well, at one point when she said that, she was actually crying. And then I just kept talking to her straight. And within like minutes, she was talking back again, straight. Like without, you know, going, you know, she was about to go into the, but she came back out. Because she realized that is what we have to do. We can't become Krishna conscious and let our human weaknesses just play and do whatever they feel like. But we can get the strength to be on guard if we want to be on guard. And the disheartenment means we don't want to be like that. So when we don't want to be how we are, that's disheartening us, if we turn that towards the deity or Krishna in your heart, if you will, or however you can learn to communicate with Krishna, because Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, he says, I'm there for you. And we heard in the Gundicha cleaning that Krishna is seated in your heart. If we could try it out, make an experiment, turn to him and say, this is really tough. I don't even think I could ever, ever, ever get over this. Is it possible? Do you think for me there could be any hope? Let's see if he reciprocates. He will reciprocate. He will reciprocate.
I was also thinking we have some help here because Lord Chaitanya is actually instructing all the devotees there and he's the one who's like the spiritual master saying, hey, do this. Don't do this on your own little whim. Just do this. Yeah. Just stay in front of the deity and do that. So I'm helping you. I'm showing you the way. And I think if we take the help of our spiritual master, that will actually help us stay on the path and stay in front rather than do other things.
That's also there. That we all see there. I would say, and that in regards to what you're saying, that we all need somebody to, a person to help us. Yeah. Sometimes it may be Diksha Guru, sometimes Diksha Guru is not available, it may be Shiksha Guru. But we need a personal voice along with our inner workings. Because they can say, no, they can see objectively. If you ever say to somebody, what is it? It seems like if you trust a person, they can give you something that... When you're ready, if you're not ready to change, then it's like death personified when somebody says, do you know you always do so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so? But if you're actually thinking, I have some confidence that I can get out of this situation, then they say something. It works very effectively, actually, to help us, or at least it helps us to know what to be on guard against, because sometimes we don't know. So the combination of a devotee's help and the help of Krishna, these two things are very powerful.
I guess if we had the faith in the intimacy of our connection with Krishna, then we would have the faith that to want is enough.
That's true. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions that one of the things that helps enormously in gaining that intimacy, that sense of intimacy, is actually visiting the Holy Dhamma. Because when we come here and we see the places and we hear about Krishna, or hear about Lord Chaitanya, he starts to become real. And in our dealings without the access of the Dhamma, he says there are three things that we should take shelter of. Krishna Naam, chanting, Krishna Dhamma, the holy places, and Krishna Kam, we're trying to satisfy Krishna's desire. And these things, they're interdependent. He says that you actually can't gain a full understanding, you can't chant the holy name properly without associating with the Dhamma. And he explains why. He explains what chanting the holy name does. It frees one from all one's ignorance and so forth. But what associating with the holy Dhamma does is it helps us to understand that Krishna's pastimes and Krishna as a person is real. That's the thing that it does. So that then, as Krishna becomes real as a person, then the doubt that maybe my, you know, I'm real, my life is like Leela, and Krishna is somewhere, sort of vague, that converts the other way around. So I've seen that for myself, and someone one time commented to me on observing my behavior that I had done no good sadhana, which was unfortunately true. I had done no good bhajan, meaning, you know, internally developing, but my development had come as a result of wandering around Vrindavan. And it was funny, I realized when I heard that, I felt like a little bit like horrified, but then a little bit realized that, wow, that's amazing, because it was true. You know, something that my husband would like to say. I wouldn't take it from him, but when somebody else observed it, I had to accept it. It was quite embarrassing. But no, the other things weren't there in very strong degree. But from coming wandering in Vrindavan, you start to realize Krishna's real. He's real. Govardhan Hill is there. He lifted Govardhan Hill. The mind still says, oh, I don't know, this could be this, this could be that. But the mind gets overridden by the fact that Krishna becomes real to one. So this is the value. And Prabhupada, practically speaking, he said himself he wanted the devotees to come once a year to India. And for myself, I've been fortunate enough over the last few years to come at least every 2 years to India. And I find it such a rechargement, you know, so that when I go back to the West, I have to work there, I have to serve there, I have to do everything, but the culture, I push it back there. That's not reality. That's just the Australian culture or New Zealand culture. And I don't believe, I don't belong to that. I have to live in it, I can relate to it, but that transition can only be achieved by associating with the Dhamma. Otherwise what? You go to another country, you see the same things. Go to England, you'll see they do the same things Australians do. Go to Germany, you see the same products in the shops and this and that and so on. A few different things here and there, but it's the same. Right, Pali? Everywhere we went, you'd say, it's just the same. They know it's a little bit different, just the same. We went to, you know, through one country after another with this one over here saying, it's the same. Why go anywhere? It's true. It's just the same. But you come to the Dhamma, it's different. It's different. And the ups and downs and pains and pleasures and everything else, after a few experiences of them, they're just part of the ride. And you get used to them all. And you're ready for them. You don't mind them. Because the main thing is, It's the transcendental nature of the Dhamma. The deity is predominant here. Lord Jagannath is the Lord of Puri. We were driving back on a rickshaw, going through the back streets. We were trying to get here on time. And we went past this place, and there were all these big pipes, you know, obviously some type of sewage or something. We went past this big hole, and I looked down, and there's this hole, right, a completely square hole. I assume they knew what they were doing. It's a completely square hole, and there's like four little Aryans down there, like, you know, like slowly hacking it away, you know. How many days did it take them to make this big hole? And then I thought, and it's like this. I mean, it obviously pipes mean they have to go somewhere. You know, and they're like really slow and they're down the hole. And I thought, how long is it going to take for them to get those pipes in the ground? You know, at the speed, kind of hacking slowly at the ground, taking a rest, taking a break, having something to eat, chew some pound, you know, hack at the ground, everything done manually, these little kind of skinny little men, you know. And I was just reflecting on how Jagannath Puri, it doesn't belong to the material world. And so even this place, you know, it looks kind of like it's a bit neat. And I can't say for sure whether it wasn't like a real artistic thing to do. But as soon as I saw those two door handles like that, I wondered whether or not it was a mistake. Because there's nothing else in this room that's like that, you know. That's Jagannath Puri, you know. One time I came and they said, there's a computer game shop. I thought, oh no, and I was like, my heart was like full of pain. I'm in Jagannath Puri and they play computer games. And I came and there were two poles like this and there was a corrugated iron roof and there was one computer there. It didn't work very well. And there's a few people sort of sitting there going, poke, 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 you know. And I thought, yes, there's something here. That yes, the materialism will touch the surface of Jagannath Puri, but this place has been here for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Lord Jagannath's been worshipped. He's not affected through guna, through yugas. He's been worshipped here. So what's a Kali Yuga between friends? he's immovable. This is his dham. This dham exists in the spiritual world. What we see here, these things change and they fluctuate. But the essence of Purushottam Dham, Jagannath Puri, is there in the Vaikuntha, in the spiritual world. So how can it be affected? So when we come to a place like that, how can we not perceive this as different than our, you know, home country that sort of touches our heart, or our, where I grew up and went to school, and this and this and this and this and this, which is very, very ephemeral and not lasting. So this is the value of coming to on Bikram and coming to these places. And I'm going over time, I'm sorry, but I was going to say that we discussed with Keshava what to do tomorrow, and we decided that what we would do is we would first of all go after breakfast, which will be late because of the titi. And then we will go to the Jagannath temple and one last time have our Harinam around the temple through all the cows and the people and the firecrackers and everything else. And then we will take rickshaw on to Narendra Sarovara. And I just saw this one pastime in here, I tagged it, about Narendra Sarovara. And there's something in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita as well. We'd like to read a little bit there and then take bath there. Oh, and before we go there, we'll go again to the Jagannath Balava Gardens. And in that Hanuman place, you know, where they were doing all their exercises, underneath, Keshava is assuring us that no big monkeys will come and beat us away. So we can sit in the shade underneath where the dirt part under the house. We want everyone to have a pen and some paper, and we want to write down. Radharaman is going to give us our writing assignments, and we'll write something, and then we can share these things when we're on the train.
Yeah, and the same with the writing assignment is reflections on Jagannath
Puri. Yes, reflections on Jagannath Puri, and then Keshava and Radharaman and Vedapriya Mataji all thought that we should do on the train also some reflections on Mayapur and Navadvip, because we were fortunate to be there as well, before they go out of our memory. Then we'll take bath at Narendra Sarovar, hear a short pastime there, and then we'll come back here for Balaram, who is just here. He's arranging to cook. He's cooking. He's a cook. And he, for years and years and years and years, he was the dresser also for Tota Gopinath. He's connected. His father was the one that got the watch. And when we visited that time, he was 11 years old. Now he's 38 years old. So we've known him distantly or closely for quite many years. So he's going to cook for us and bring here to the hotel Jagannath Gopinath's Mahaprasad and some Mahaprasad for us to take on the train. So this will be part of tomorrow's adventure.